OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities. A connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm on a call today with Stephen van Coller, newly appointed CEO of listed IT services group EOH. Stephen, welcome to the podcast. I think it's fair to say that EOH has just finished one of the toughest years in its history. There's clearly an enormous amount that has gone wrong in the past 12 to 18 months and an enormous amount that needs to be fixed. I'm curious, why did you leave a senior and probably very interesting role at MTN Group to take on this daunting task?
Sure, good question. But, you know, there was a few things that really interested me, and thanks for having me on the show. But the first thing was, you know, I had quite a few discussions with Asha, and the more I discussed with them, the more I realized that there were all the bits that are needed in the industrial, in the fourth industrial revolution, all sitting within EOH. But because they're very much a product business, lots of engineers creating stuff, they haven't actually put the bits together. Mm-hmm. And I thought, having been on the other side of the fence, being a purchaser of their technology, I could actually help quite a lot in envisaging what these ecosystems for customers could be. That was the first thing. The second thing is, having been a banker for a long time, I had a lot of corporate relationships. And so when I phoned up a few of them, especially the large ones, and asked them about EOH, they were all very complimentary about the business that they run, which obviously gave me a lot of comfort. The third was, you know, I've been in big corporate for my whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, it was Ernst & Young, and then it was Deutsche Bank, and then it was Barclays, and you know, then it was MTN. And what I was really looking for was a more entrepreneurial type role. I'd originally gone to MTN to do something more entrepreneurial, but when the new CEO came, he wanted me to do other things which didn't really suit what I wanted to do, and so I agreed with him to sort out that and then move on. And you know, this came up a bit sooner than I wanted. And I expected, but you can't always, you know, judge those things.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's just a very exciting opportunity in the middle of what's changing the world at the moment, the whole digitization, everything. I just, it was just like the perfect opportunity, you know, to shape and make a difference.
All right. So, Stephen, you have expertise, as you've mentioned, in corporate banking and in deal making, as well as more recently in the telecommunications sector. How do you see those skills as important in your role as CEO of EOH?
So the way they've set up EOH now is that the holding company, of which I'm obviously the CEO, is very much almost an investment holding company now. Well, that's where they want to get it to. Let me put it rather like that. And then, so what I have to do is bring those corporate finance skills to bear, capital structuring, capital management skills into the business. Set up EOH, RCT, and Nextech and the IP business with appropriate structures and funding and capital so that they can run independently and grow, because they're different businesses, so they can grow at different speeds and do different things. Obviously I can do that. The second thing clearly is, you know, having been through the whole 2008-2009 banking crisis, I know exactly what's required in terms of governance, whether it's anti-bribery and corruption, fraud, anti-terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the banking regulation is probably some of the toughest in the world. So yep. For me, coming to do it in a technology company, we're actually, you know, putting in only a tenth of what you need in a bank. And so, you know, I think those skills just don't reside in an engineer's technology company.
Sure. And your experience at MTN, do you think there's learnings you can bring from MTN into EOH?
Well, you know, it was quite interesting. When I was in the banking world, people asked me the same question when I went to MTN, and they said, you know, what does a banker know about technology? But really, whether you've been from a bank or a corporate investment bank, basically you're selling technology to your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're selling a service. And it was no different when I went to MTN. And actually, MTN helped me a lot to understand what the mobile world and mobile first could do in the financial services industry. So it was very interesting. A lot of the gaps I had in some of my thinking were filled very quickly when I went to MTN, because it's very much a mass market a business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've said to people, having gone through sort of two reimaginings, both at, you know, Barclays and at MTN, really prepared me to do this job. I actually, to be quite frank, I don't think I could have done it 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas coming here now, I can very quickly see what needs to be done. Is it easy? No, it's not. You have to go through process. It takes time. But it was quite interesting that this whole tech business is now going through the whole customer centricity digitization process that we were going through at the bank and at MTN. And you're just on the other side of the wall. So I think that is very interesting. And it's all about, you know, we're very much a B2B business here, which was very much what we were at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
But even at the bank, you were trying to help your customers help their customers. So my clients were corporates, but their customers were largely consumers. And so you had to understand the B2B2C. At MTN, it was the same. You know, you had 220, 230 million consumers, and you needed to find a way to help them. And now you get into EOH, and the opportunity isn't just a B2B, let me come and help you drop boxes or run your data center or something. You need to imagine how you can create an ecosystem to help the corporate help the customer. So you need to understand the B2C bit so that you can sell them the product and be B2B. So digitization is making you stretch yourself right into the consumer world, and that's quite exciting.
So a FY 2018 loss of 100 million rand, but as you say in the results, there are a lot of once-offs in there. In 2017, EOH's profit was about just under 1.2 billion rand, so that's a massive reversal year on year. Do you see EOH getting back to the 2017 sort of profitability levels anytime soon, or is it going to be a long, hard slog from here?
I do. I mean, it's hard to know how quickly. But the point is, if I have a look at what our normalized results are, and those one-offs are really largely due to two big events. You know, one is the GTC unwind,
mm-hmm.
and two is a bad acquisition, if I can put it that way. And that was a big acquisition. It was a, you know, nearly a billion rand acquisition, and that went wrong. So obviously big effect. And then also, there's been a close down of the more complex change management projects with the public sector that typically take, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. But the cash flow implications and the complexity around them made it quite difficult to make them profitable. And when you close those things down, you know, there's a lot of people implications. You have to close down existing projects, so you know you're winding them down, and that was another nearly 400 million. So a lot of those losses related to two big projects. You saw the EOH business, the ICT business, the technology business doing, you know, well. It was slightly up, but say, flattish year on year, still making good profit. We really need to make sure that both in the industrial technologies business and the business processing business, that we really focus those on the profitable and cash-generating projects rather than driving for revenue. And so much more focused around an EBITDA cash flow level and profit before tax level. And that's going to be the big challenge. So I think it's a two-year project. I mean, my experience is these things take 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there's very good underlying businesses.
Okay. So EOH has announced some time ago now, actually, that it's being split into two organizations, EOH focused on traditional IT services and Next Tech, which is going to pursue new high-growth opportunities. That restructuring was announced and decided upon before you took over as CEO. In your view, is the group optimally structured now, or does there need to be further change?
The way I've put it to other people is they built the house. We haven't furnished the rooms yet,
right,
and we haven't built the outhouses. You know, we haven't built the garages and stuff. So I think in the IT business and the international business, there's still some thinking to be done. I've got some ideas around that, but, you know, I need to get into the detail.
Sure.
I think the EOH technology business, probably 70% there because it's the historic business. We just need to get a bit more clarity around these communities, the six communities Rob was talking about. I think those are very key, and because you start creating these cross-functional teams building customer ecosystems. Next Tech's probably only about 30% there, so there's a bit more work to be done. They're still very much individual businesses driving individual revenue, and we need to imagine what those maybe 10 or 15 ecosystems are going to be, and then aggregate the businesses around that and, you know, create some efficiencies and synergy and focus on that. So that, I think, hopefully by the end of this year, EOH Technologies is done, and you've probably got an 18-month, two-year journey with the next tech business.
EOH has been criticized over the last while over its governance. Do you think, and that some announcements have been made around that, including strengthening the board with new independent directors, do you believe enough has been done?
I still think there's some work to be done in terms of creating the process and structure and what do you want to call it, embedding it in the business. So that started, but it's new. I don't think this has been a core strength of theirs. You know, we have one compliance person in the business. It's clearly not enough for a business our size. And so there's some things we're going to do. I mean, we are going to, one of the basic things is obviously splitting the finance function from the legal compliance company secretary function from the, you know, corporate development and strategy function and from internal audit. At the moment, because the way it's going up as a, you know, single department.
And,
you know, these are fairly basic things, but they make a big difference.
I suppose related to that question, how do you, as the new CEO of EOH, go about restoring the confidence of investors, many of whom have clearly been quite badly burnt by what's happened with the share price over the last little while?
Yeah, there's two things, I think. I mean, the first one is we need to get some real transparency on what's going on in the balance sheet and the business and everything so people can, you know, understand it and then take their own views. But I think more importantly, as was your earlier question, you know, can we return the business to the profitability that it had in 2017.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, people are going to wait and see. So, I mean, you saw the webinar. The real importance for me is we need to agree on the strategy, agree what those metrics are, and then people must get incentivized against those metrics. And if there's cash, you pay cash bonus. If there's profit and no cash, then you pay shares, and if there's none of those, you pay nothing, you know, and I'm a firm believer in you make what you measure, And so we need to get the proper measurements in place that gets audited, and you know, we can really let people go and do what they're good at, knowing that if they achieve, there's a defined outcome.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you've got your founder, longtime CEO, Asher Bobot, serving as the chairman of EOH. Is that a difficult position for you as the CEO? I mean, is there a concern? He's obviously quite a strong and forceful character. Is there a concern that he's going to try and micromanage you from the board perspective?
From my side, no concern for two reasons. I mean, one is he's not there all the time. He doesn't come in every day and spend his time there. I mean, him and I agreed a way of work, and he's very cognizant of that. Number one. Number two is, you know, with all the processes around the board and the board committees and the exco and the exco committees, I mean, it's very difficult even for me to micromanage. I mean, that's the way you have to set up the governance, and that was key.
Okay.
The third thing is, you know, he needs to be there for a while. And I don't know how long that is and how long he wants to stay, but I've asked him just to help me with some of the reimagining of the strategy, because, you know, he was the guy who thought about it and set it up. So there's a lot of DNA there, and I would hate to lose the DNA while I'm still getting up to speed on, you know, all the underlying bits.
Yeah.
But no, him and I get on quite well, he's very approachable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wanted to ask about the Lebashe deal, and specifically, it's been reported this morning that you'll use the 1 billion rand cash injection from the new BEE partner to pay down debt and finalize payment for previous acquisitions made. EOH has historically used its paper, and historically it's been paper that's been worth a lot, to fund acquisitions. And some analysts have suggested that this is no longer really an option for EOH, given its share price today. Does EOH continue to be acquisitive as it has been in the past? And if so, how does it fund those deals?
Yeah, I think you've answered your own question. firstly, you know, with our paper valued like it is, you're only going to issue paper if you can get companies at a lower PE than you issue it. Otherwise, it's pointless doing it.
Yep.
Unless it really creates some significant synergy. And the second thing is, you're not going to, I think we've got enough debt. We don't need any more. So you're only going to use debt to acquire a business if it's cash generative enough to repay the debt that you know, generate enough cash to repay the debt that you have to put on your balance sheet for it. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. If the share price goes up and you get a better PE, then there's obviously more companies that are prepared to sell to you at a lower PE, and then you can get back into acquisitions. But right now, I think, you know, we sort of where we are. There may be some few small acquisitions we do in the short to medium term, but I think until we've got these two businesses properly structured and with, you know, proper capital structures, then you can actually have a look at, firstly, having a look within those capital structures, do you do acquisitions? And then once the dividends start flowing into the group company, you can then start having a look at, do you actually have a look at acquiring some RP outside of them? So I think that's going to be a process.
So in the short to medium term, any growth that we see out of EOH will be largely organic, will it?
Correct.
Okay. Stephen, before I let you go, one final question. We know the new EOH subsidiary is going to focus on traditional IT, but Nextech, what do you see that business becoming? What are the opportunities there, and what sort of areas do you see it going into?
So Nextech very much specialized industrial technology, so it's very much in the water sanitation space, it's in the mining space, it's in the renewable energy space, it's in the healthcare space. So it's really having a look at sectors and then having a look at their specific requirements and creating digital IP to allow them to digitize their processes. Like, for example, if you're going to a hospital, can you book online? Can you do everything on your phone before you get there? Do you know where your room is? Can you pay the doctor? Can you pay your room? Can you connect everything, you know, together? So your whole experience becomes paperless. Before you get there, it's all organized, etc. You don't have to get there and stand in the queue. So it's building these digital assets for these businesses. Some of it is bespoke, so people will come with a problem they want solved. In other cases, it can be quite generic, you know, like a booking system for a hospital. And then the idea there is then to obviously leverage it, build it once and leverage it into many, you know, customers, and then you earn license fees and implementation fees and management fees, you know, over time, and then it becomes a more annuity-type business.
Okay. Stephen van Coller is the newly appointed CEO of EOH. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Thanks very much. Appreciate the time.